From the Conference Center in Salt Lake City, Utah, this is Conversations, here on the Mormon Channel. The Mormon Channel is an official channel of The Church of Jesus Christ of Latter-day Saints. Conversations is a series featuring discussions with members of The Church of Jesus Christ of Latter-day Saints who have a unique perspective or an interesting story. Today's conversation is with Dr. Rodney K. Smith. Dr. Smith is a teacher, author, lawyer, and former president of Southern Virginia University. Rick Starr is the host for this episode.
Welcome to Conversations. My name is Rick Starr. Our guest today is Brother Rodney K. Smith, who currently serves as the president of Southern Virginia University in Buena Vista, Virginia. Brother Smith has also served as dean and professor of law at many institutions across the country. In addition, he's also written 4 books on sports law, religion, and business, and has also written over 25 scholarly articles on constitutional and sports law subjects. I think he's also quick to note that one of his greatest accomplishments is that he has married well, has 8 children and 20 grandchildren. Brother Smith, thank you so much for being here on Conversations with us today.
It's wonderful to be with you.
We're going to talk a lot about what you currently do a little later as president of Southern Virginia. But I think we'd like to get to know you a little bit. What is your upbringing? I know you're a convert to the church, but let's begin with your upbringing. Where were you raised?
I grew up in Bishop, California, which is on the eastern slope of the Sierras. In fact, it was the westernmost point of the old state of Deseret.
Mm-hmm. Oh, really?
And it was an idyllic place to grow up. I could actually fish on the way home from school. I often think of my own grandchildren and the lives they live with all the distractions and all the other things. Mm-hmm. And we could ride our bikes all across town and play. And it was a small town, so I was able to be involved in everything. It was just a wonderful place to grow up.
How many siblings did you have?
I have a brother and a sister, both older, so I'm the baby of the family.
What was your religious upbringing?
I guess would have fallen into that political category of unspecified Protestants. My father was Presbyterian. My mother was Church of Christ. They were not particularly church-going people. They were both people of faith. But my grandmother on my mother's side would come and visit, and she taught at Abilene Christian College. She taught art and was a very religious woman. And thanks to my granny, I cannot remember when I didn't know that Jesus was the Christ. Mm. And I really attribute that to my grandmother, who would come and visit, and I just loved being with her, and she would read from the scriptures to me, and Granny knew and I knew.
Mm, that's wonderful. Well, you are a convert to the church in your early 20s. What brought you to the Church of Jesus Christ of Latter-day Saints? Talk about your conversion story.
Well, it's one of the reasons I believe so much in the notion of the right of conscience. I always wanted to know what my purpose in life was. Mm-hmm. And I went to church after church. If there was ever anyone that invited me, I would go. I wanted to know the truth. I was pursuing it. And when I went to college, I had an LDS roommate. We became good friends. I will never forget an evening when he was having a discussion with another friend about the 3 degrees of glory. And this Jewish roommate thought that that didn't make any sense. And when he came back to the room, I said, Jeff, I know that's true. Hmm. And I did, from a very special experience, actually a dream that I'd had as a young man, and I just knew it was true. So he obviously then took me with him to church, and it was actually one of those sad occasions. We went to church, both of us, and no one acknowledged our presence there.
Really?
And then he went off and started preparing for a mission, and I ended up transferring, going to another school, and then ended up working in a congressional office in Washington, D.C., and another Latter-day Saint came in, and we became dear friends, and he then invited me to come with him to church. He said, "You wouldn't want to come with me to church, would you?" And I said, "Sure." And I went, and I felt very much at home. In fact, as I started taking the discussions, I said, "I just really want to have what you have." And they said, "That's easy, Rod. All you have to do is read the Book of Mormon, pray about it, and you'll know it's true." Well, I took them at their word. I had the Book of Mormon. I had a marvelous work and a wonder. And I would look at a marvelous work and a wonder and said, "No, that can't be." And then I'd go back and look in the scriptures, and yes, it was. And I had read the Old and New Testament before. So I was reading the Book of Mormon. I can remember the moment as I started a verse, not knowing it was true, and ending knowing it was true. And I'm embarrassed to say the very first thought that came through my mind was, "Oh no, bring on the sackcloth and ashes. Now I'm a Mormon." But it has turned out for me to be the source of all that's good and wonderful in my life. My wife, my 8 children, my 20 grandchildren, the oldest of whom is 11. All that I have, I owe to that moment. And the verse is interesting because it was, "Fear not what God can do, for perfect love casteth out all fear." And in that moment, I knew.
You have a parallel experience to Joseph Smith in many ways, both parents being in different Protestant religions, and you being willing and earnestly seeking. And when the church came along with the Book of Mormon, you were totally willing and interested in giving that a try, trying the virtue of the Word of God, I guess you could say.
That's right. And as is always the case, it's made all the difference. The other thing that, of course, is wonderful in all of this, Brother Starr, is what happens is people so often neglect the fifth verse of Moroni 3-5. But really what we learn there is that once I knew how my Father in heaven spoke to me, once I had that revelation that the Book of Mormon was true, I knew how he would speak to me the rest of my lifetime. I knew his voice. And how grateful we must be as a people for having what so many lack. And I can still remember what it was like to be without that.
You know, your wife was also a convert, you said.
Yes.
Were you married before you both became converted to the church? Or
no, she joined at 16 in a different time, in a different place. I had joined, and then I went back, and I was running a congressional campaign for a friend. And the bishop called me aside and said, "Rod, I just felt," we were at a stake meeting, he said, I just felt like you should get married." And I laughed and said, "Bishop, that sounds good to me, but if perhaps you've not noticed, there's no one eligible in the entire ward." He said, "I know nothing about that. I just know what I felt." Through a series of events, within less than a month, my wife had moved in to the ward. And I know she couldn't possibly have fallen in love with me had there been other choices. And so I was the choice, and we fell in love. And my grandchildren will listen to this, and I just want them to know that holding their grandmother's hand over the altar was the greatest moment in my life, all made possible by reading the Book of Mormon.
That is really wonderful. After you you were converted to the gospel, you went on to BYU, though.
Yes, I got on to graduate school, and then I went to run this campaign, but really to meet my wife. And I met my wife. And when I was in graduate school, I just had this. My father was a lawyer, and so I wasn't going to be a lawyer because I wasn't going to follow in my father's footsteps. I was going to be independent. But then I had another one of those precious experiences, and I knew it was right. And then I had a number of options. Again, my father, who was a lawyer, didn't care for the option at BYU. He said, well, if you want to go and be with the Mormons, go to the University of Utah. I was also admitted there, and I ended up going to BYU, and Dad visited and then turned to me and said, this is the finest law school I've ever seen. And those continue to be my sentiment to this very day. In order to get into teaching, I was the first graduate of BYU's law school to go into full-time law teaching. I asked Carl Hawkins, who had been the dean for two of my years when I was in law school. I said, what do I need to do? And he knew legal education. He said, you're going to have to go sanitize your degree. You're going to have to go. At this stage, people don't know BYU's law school. You're going to have to go to an Ivy League school. So I went to the University of Pennsylvania, and I did a master's and a doctorate there. But I still stand by BYU being the really finest law school that I've known.
As both an attorney and as a teacher, you have a couple of interesting focuses, sports law and also a great interest in constitutional laws as it relates to religious freedom. Talk a little bit about your interest in those two different areas.
I'm often asked, how could you be interested in two such disparate topics? And the answer, a little bit tongue-in-cheek, is, well, if I'm going to be interested in religion, I'm going to be interested in the religion of the American people, sport. Now, we know it's not a religion. And yet, if you look at the devotion of so many, it is so significant. In this country, we spend $2 on sport for every dollar we spend on education. And it's woefully understudied. The other side, of course, is very natural. In fact, I did my dissertation at Pennsylvania really on the First Amendment, and much of it was on the thought of James Madison. I like to say Madison was involved, and we are now in Virginia in the cradle of the temporal restoration, where these great thoughts all coalesced in a wonderful way, and where those wonderful people of intellect recognized at the same time that the Lord was involved in all of this. And so for me, conscience has always been very, very important. It is the highest order of agency, is to act on what we know is true and act according to our conscience. And I really have argued that the entire First Amendment's about conscience. People like to say, oh, it's about press, or it's about association, or it's about expression. But the fact of the matter is, all of those are just means. And what are they means to? What's the most important thing we want to publish? That which we feel is a matter of conscience. Why do we most want to associate? For those matters of conscience. And the highest order of conscience, so high in the order of matters of conscience, is religious liberty. His religious conscience. And it was recognized as such. Madison referred to it as the highest property right. It is the highest right. And so we also have an establishment clause to make sure that this right that should be protected above all others doesn't intrude on others' equal right of conscience. So the First Amendment really is about conscience, and sport is so important in our society and is woefully understudied. We still think it's a game, and yet we pour resources, individual and societal, into it. It needs to be studied.
I read a recent article that you wrote for Deseret News, and you talked about Madison as the author of the Constitution. You said that he referred to religion as the duty which we owe our Creator, and the manner of discharging that duty. And I thought that was a beautiful description of religion
on an individual basis. Why he used exercise, the manner of discharging it. And he said in that statement, when he introduced his amendment to the Virginia Declaration of Rights on Religious Liberty, he made it clear that this right was beyond the reach of government. So sacred was this right. That's why he called it the sacred right. It was between a man or a woman and their God. And no just government could intrude unduly.
You seem to make the case also that the place of government in that relationship is to protect that right. Not to control it or administer over it, but to protect that individual right.
And in fact, Madison himself said there were only two areas in which you could limit it. One was if the interests of the state were manifestly endangered.
Mm-hmm.
Two, if the equal rights of another or that right of conscience of another. Then the state could intervene. Otherwise, the state needed to give full right. And what's happened is we've sort of flip-flopped this in the 21st century. Now we think speech and press, but we need to realize, that's why I want to write this book, that those are merely means, and the highest order or end is conscience.
Mm-hmm.
Whether it's an environmental conscience or the highest or most sacred of all conscience, that between a man and a woman and their God.
Wonderful insight on that subject. We'd like to remind you, as our listeners, that you're listening to the Mormon Channel of The Church of Jesus Christ of Latter-day Saints. Our guest today is Brother Rodney K. Smith, who is currently serving as the president of Southern Virginia University in Buena Vista, Virginia. Very interesting university on the east side of the country, who serves an LDS academic community. And it would be interesting to hear a little bit about that university and how it came to be. There's quite a miracle behind that story. Would you share that with us?
Let me take you back to 1867.
Okay.
In a sense, we're the oldest. If you go back to our charter, if you will, we're the oldest existing institution that serves Latter-day Saints. Now, we didn't serve Latter-day Saints until 1996, but we began in 1867 as a finishing school for debutantes. As the Civil War came to an end, there was a need to sort of reclaim education and education for women.
Mm-hmm.
And so it was a women's college for years and years. Well, ultimately, that began, the notion of a women's college just wasn't as popular as it had been one day, and they were not able to make it financially, and they tried to become co-ed, and that didn't work, and they were on the verge of bankruptcy and were sending out feelers. Was there anyone who would be interested? And
was that up through the 1900s?
Yes. We're now up in 1995, 96 now.
Oh, okay.
As they're beginning. So they became a co-ed in the 70s. They existed mm-hmm. only as a women's college for a long, long time, over a century, and mm-hmm. then it switched. What happened at that point was there was a member of a stake presidency who was an educator over at a college in Richmond. And he and the stake president had always had these conversations about, oh, we should have a church school in the East. And the counselor said to the president, well, I think I found it. And the president said, I'm not really interested in that, because at that point in time, he realized it might entail resources.
Mm-hmm.
Nevertheless, his counselor persuaded the stake president, Roger Barris persuaded Clay Knight, to come over and visit, because it had been a school with a horse program, equestrian program, and Glade loves horses. Mm. So he came over ostensibly to see the horses. Roger had something else in mind. Oh. And as Glade walked the campus, he had the strongest sense. To hear him tell it is a very special thing. But he could sense the presence of Latter-day Saint young people walking that campus.
Mm.
And to this day, he will come back. He serves as the chairman of our board, and he'll walk the campus and just see how that came to fruition. Now, like all good things, it wasn't easy.
Mm-hmm.
But having had that experience, he said, I'll do what I can, and he has, and many, many others have been very generous over the years. And we started with 74 students that first fall in 1996, and we've grown better than tenfold.
Mm, yeah, you're just about almost 800 students right
yes,
now?
Yes, we should be over 800 in the fall.
That's wonderful. Some of the principles that the school are founded upon are very interesting. One of the things that I read about is that you are dedicated to the principle of leader servants. I think President Kimball maybe coined that term. I'm not sure, but expound on that a little bit.
It is. Our mission is to prepare leader servants in
what is a leader servant?
The workplace, the world, the community, the church, mm-hmm. the home. A leader servant, yes, you're exactly right. President Kimball coined the phrase. Servant leadership is very common, and many Catholic scholars really gave it its life. Mm-hmm. It was always interesting to me that first President Kimball, and then when I first heard it, it was with Elder Maxwell, was speaking in a priesthood meeting, calling upon all of us to be the leader servants, essentially, we were called to be. Mm-hmm. And I loved it right down to the hyphen, leader servants. And when you think of this rising generation, and I will say this to our students all the time, is there are too few of you. Every one of you has to live equal to your call to be a leader servant. Mm. You will lead by serving, and you will serve by leading. And we like to say, you will do it in the footsteps of the master servant.
I know there are a few core values that the school embodies, and they caught my eye. There's five of them, and they caught my eye because one of them is enthusiasm, and I thought that was an interesting core value to have. Could you share those five values with us?
Let me start with enthusiasm.
Okay.
The root of enthusiasm is in theos, in God. Hmm. And I think with joy on the message of so many of the brethren and our other leaders who are calling us in these sometimes tumultuous times, calling upon us to be an enthusiastic people, mm-hmm. a people that are in God, that embrace all that's good in this life. And we want our students to have that enthusiasm. Our first core value that we add to its refinement. We want them to study the best of art, the best of music. Mm-hmm. Then we want them to be enthusiastic. We want them to be accountable. I have really been struck, Rick, as I think we really are 180 degrees from where we ought to be on a principle, and this is where accountability comes in. And that is that the world likes to say, if anything good happened in my life, I did it. And anything bad, I'm going to find somebody to blame. But the gospel principle is just the opposite. I know in my life, anything that's awry has to do with me. And all that's good comes from God. Mm. We need to be accountable. We need to be disciples. And we need to be thoughtful, scholarly disciples. So that was another one that Elder Maxwell liked to hyphenate scholar disciples. So those were our five core values, and we seek to weave them through our core experience. We don't have a general education as much as we have a core, mm-hmm. because we want the student to come and in that core find themselves. And then they can determine what they're going to major in. But first, find yourself. I had a daughter who had transferred actually from BYU after her mission, and she'd been a communications major, but she actually found herself later in an art history class. Hmm. So we have a core curriculum, and in fact, we're proud of the fact that the Intercollegiate Studies Institute picked us, along with places like Princeton, the University of Chicago, as one of 50 all-American colleges for the core of that core, and we look at the great texts. I just gave a talk at Yale on the rule of law and core texts. Mm-hmm. Our students need to read Locke. They need to read Madison. They need to read Hamilton, just as they need to read the great works of literature and to go through college and not be exposed to Bach. Mm. It needs to be part of their core.
That is really wonderful. I think you gave a talk at Southern Virginia where you talked about the efficiency of the large and the effectiveness of the small. What do you mean by those two terms?
They make great sense to Latter-day Saints. And the way I explain it, let me start with sort of the church version of it. Part of my responsibilities, President, has been to come to conference. Mm-hmm. I revel in the capacity to reach all the world. That can only be done through large. I have a daughter serving on Temple Square, and I had a daughter before her who served here, and they've been in the humanitarian department. It is so wonderful that we can have a problem and we can respond to it so quickly. Now, we bristle sometimes at the bureaucracy, But we should be very, very grateful for the genius of large. I have spent most of my professional life, or much of it, in the South, where they pride themselves on large churches. Mm-hmm. But I think no one does it better than we do. But at the same time, we have wards and stakes. They are the genius of small. When they get to be a certain size, we split them. Why? Because people can grow. I'd been a member but 5 years when I was called as a bishop. I wasn't called in my ability. I was called as an opportunity to grow. And the Lord, I think, trusted that I would do all that I could to do all that he would have me do in that responsibility. But it's a great growing opportunity, and we have both. And each are just a phone call away. Well, it has been our position that we need the same thing in higher education. And I have spent most of my professional life among the large. I really sincerely believe that no one does large better than we do in our institutions at the BYUs. And BYU-Idaho is very different than BYU-Provo, but they each reach special souls. So too with Hawaii, so too with the LDS Business College. Well, the same token, we need small. And so our model is we'll grow to about 1,000, we'll perfect it. We now are very pleased. We've had, every year I've been there, we've had very strong audits. And our budgets have balanced. We, on the Department of Education standards, all the budgetary pieces are in, the educational pieces are in place. And so we'll grow and then be able to one day have another campus somewhere and another campus and have the small. Now, here's the effectiveness of small. And I knew this as one who taught in large. In a class of 15 or 16, our average class size, wonderful things happen. It's more like a boardroom. And students come and they have a very dynamic experience. And we use all of these national assessments. We use things like, my favorite's the Collegiate Learning Assessment, which assesses in writing and entering freshmen's capacity to solve or analyze a problem. Then they give them a problem as they're about to graduate and compare them with other graduates. And our students come to us at the 68th percentile, and they leave at the 93rd. That's the genius of small. In small, we learn how to solve problems. Also, the level of engagement that they have, the level of involvement that students have on campus is just wonderful. And then, of course, like the large schools that embrace LDS values, we take great advantage of the student wards. And, and we have an institute that is in the middle of campus, occupies virtually a block in the middle of campus. Last year, for 700 students, we had to offer 60 institute classes to satisfy their needs. So you have this, these great things happening in the classroom, and we also seek to have the spirit in the classroom, and we have the same percentage of terminal degrees, PhDs, as at a BYU-Provo, but in a small context. And we only do undergraduate education. And so we embrace this genius of small. Every student senses that they belong. Every student senses that their confidence as a son or daughter of God's being increased. They write more papers. They read more books. 40% are in intercollegiate athletics. 35% are in the fine and performing arts. Our chamber choir or chorale has a tithe of our students in it, over 10%. A high level of engagement. In fact, I was asked recently by one of the brethren, but did we know why students would come to Southern Virginia? We do know. The first reason is the spiritual. We embrace LDS values. We're 95, 96% LDS. We have this wonderful, probably the most active institute in the church, the largest certainly in the East. Then we have the student wards, and then we have, and we correlate our efforts as, without sharing confidential matters, we correlate our efforts to bless the souls of the students. Mm-hmm. And large institutions do that too. With they incorporate the small in that way. Mm-hmm. And they incorporate the small on the academic side with honors and other programs. So we're the small, the genius of small. We've actually trademarked that phrase, the genius of small.
Really?
There is a genius to small.
Yeah.
It's by small means. Mm-hmm. Great things come to pass.
Maybe that's why families are so important, because there's that's the university of the family, or the laboratory of the family, is where so much can be learned individually, just by those relationships within a family, within the walls of a home.
That's the way the Lord works. Yeah. He first, just the way he did in my life. I'm now a young men's president, and the first day I came in the class, I said, can you tell me what the first word of the sacrament prayer means? They paused and thought, oh? And then we spent 10 or 15 minutes talking about that. Think about this. And this is what we want our students to understand. He who knows all, omniscient, omnipotent, worlds without end, trillions upon trillions, and yet he would answer a boy who so needed to hear. Mm-hmm. And from that, in my wife's case, I'm using my case, my wife, and then our children. And he understands large, and he understands small, and the kingdom moves forth best with both.
You know, I think that's one of the most beautiful promises of the gospel, is that a God who is omnipotent, as you mentioned, would have an interest in an individual enough that that individual could petition God and receive a personalized message, so to speak, regarding the gospel, without the persuasion of other men involved with a direct line.
And then if you think about I just taught a course this summer. We have a shortened term. We have a system now that a student can graduate in 3 years if they go fall, spring, and May. Mm-hmm. They can, and therefore the cost, it really ends up, the net cost ends up being comparable to a BYU, so they could do that. And I was teaching that course, but we started with actually the first session with Elder Christofferson's talk from conference, mm-hmm. that they would learn to take critique, that they would learn in that way, and then also an address by Elder Bednar on using the Holy Ghost. We'll gather our returned missionaries together as they come back, or we'll have a group of the entering students, and I'll have one of the missionaries stand. I'll say, did you have a good mission? Oh, yes, I had a good mission, Preston. So it was easy. Oh, no, Preston, my mission was hard. And I said, so how should your education be? How should the rest of your life be? Hard. Get accustomed to doing the hard things. As you do, you will see that you are lifted by the Spirit and find that you have the capacity to do all things through He who will assist you in that effort. So it's a great joining together of that kind of principle, but it's hard, and their education should be hard. I was appalled to hear recently that the average student is reading but 5 pages for a given class session.
Now, you're talking about a college student?
A college student.
Really?
Now, they can get away with it. They can just take notes and crib and do whatever at the end and cram and go to a testing center and take that. In fact, I had a daughter who was very distressed. She transferred in her first class that she took at Southern Virginia. We have a program at Oxford, and she was there. And she called home very distressed. She said, this is too hard. And her mother said, what's too hard? And I'm having to read all these books. She said, well, you had to read those books where you came from. And she said, well, yeah, sort of. But, Mom, it's not the same thing. I also have to talk about them, the ideas that are in them, and so forth. But it is a wonderful thing. probably the most gratifying things to me about being president has been to watch what happens in the lives of these students as they come to realize with the help of the Lord they can do hard things. And then to realize that we just had a study that was done. This was immensely gratifying to me, to 90% of our graduates report being active in the church.
Mm. Wonderful.
I just sat and let that wash over my soul, the notion that such a thing could be. And that gives one the capacity to get up and do the hard things.
Well, Brother Smith, let's take a moment and remind our listeners they're listening to the Mormon Channel of The Church of Jesus Christ of Latter-day Saints. Our guest today is Rodney K. Smith, who is currently the president of Southern Virginia University in Buena Vista, Virginia. You've got a new position that you're accepting, but you're still going to be involved in supporting the university. Talk a little bit about the new position you'll be taking and maybe some of the highlights of your now going on about 7 years as president of that university.
It's been just over 7 years mm-hmm. now, and they've been seven wonderful years. I like to say, with very few exceptions, we're a church of new assignments, and I have a new assignment. I just had a series of experiences that caused me to know that it was time for me to make a slight change. Mm-hmm. Having said that, my commitment to Southern Virginia remains very, very much at the forefront. I'm going to go and I will teach a couple of days a week, and I will direct a center on law and sport and sports law and policy and mm-hmm. to deal with those kinds of issues. But I will have a good deal of time to continue to build Southern Virginia, particularly in the West. I'm very committed to doing that. I will stay on as I've been elected as the new vice chairman of our board to trustees. And I have a new assignment in the Southern Virginia family, if you will, but mm-hmm. it remains very much Southern Virginia. And there's much that I'm proud of. It runs from and pride's a funny word, much I'm grateful for, that I've seen happen in my 7 years. People worried about our capacity to survive financially. I don't think they have such reason to worry mm-hmm. anymore. And then there was some question about, were we going to be BYU in the East, or who were we? Well, we're the genius of small. And one of the BYU presidents said to me once, said, Rod, isn't it wonderful? Latter-day Saint young people now have a choice that fits their particular needs, because Southern Virginia is very different than BYU Provo or BYU Idaho or BYU Hawaii or the LDS. But every need is met. So it's been wonderful to see that. But of course, the really gratifying things are, I came last week and under my door was a note from a young man. He'd come home early from his mission. Under the genius of small, I knew him before he left, and I called him, and he was going to go to a state university. And I just had the strongest feeling that he would be distracted. He wouldn't intentionally be swept away, but the world would just sort of encroach in his life and sort of flow under his door, and we'd lose him. So I worked very hard to have him return. And so I came to find this letter under my door, in which he said, how could you know? How could you know how much I needed to be here, where I'd have faculty who cared, where I could be involved in it? He was in the athletics, and he was also in the orchestra. Hmm. But very involved, wonderful young man. And he said, I've left with my testimony strengthened, and he's ready to go on to graduate school, which actually about 55% of our students go on to graduate and professional school. Mm-hmm. It's designed to do that mm-hmm. for them. But most importantly, in this genius of small, and he talked about the institute, he talked about his student ward, and he talked about the faculty who cared about him. He even, in a very kind way, talked about a president who cared about him. That's what's gratifying. That's the legacy we leave.
What would your advice be to a young man or woman just coming out of high school regardless of what college they attend, but they're Latter-day Saints, what advice would you have for somebody that is in that position, looking forward to their education, their life? What would you advise them to do?
Actually, there's a little talk that I've given. It's a Latter-day Saint guide to higher education in tumultuous times, and it's really the essence of that talk, and I've given it throughout the church. It's not an advertisement for Southern Virginia by any means. And really what I say to them is, unlike that idyllic world I grew up in, this is a world filled with distractions. Mm-hmm. This is a very difficult world, and yet each one of them called in their greatness is to be a leader servant. Now, they need to either go to an institution that embraces church values, and they then also have to use their agency, their conscience, to embrace those values that's made easier at those institutions. Mm-hmm. Or if they go to a state or other university, go where there's a strong institute. But it's not enough for a parent to say, oh, well, Sally's going to be at a school and there's a strong institute. They need to be sure she's going, taking classes for credit, involved in her student ward. Mm-hmm. If Sally does that, she's as likely to leave Temple Faithful as if she goes to one of the universities like our own that embraces Latter-day Saint values. Mm-hmm. She's just going to have to be much more intentional about it. And it's going to be so easy to be distracted. We don't lose a young person, and we lose so many. We don't lose them overnight. They slip away.
Yeah.
And to avoid the distractions. And then, of course, the other thing I would say to them was where I started with my own testimony. If you're to look at education, the greatest education you're going to receive is in your home. Mm-hmm. But you're going to need to live worthy to have the Spirit so that you can do that graduate education you're going to learn in your home. And then, of course, for a young man and for a young woman who chooses, two of my three daughters have, to serve missions, a mission, greatest education that mm-hmm. there is. And then, of course, the education itself that you have. But in all those, you have to say, I'm going to receive the blessing to the Spirit of the Holy Ghost, and I'm going to use it so that I can grow. And I always close by saying to them, and this is, I guess if I was called to do anything outside of my the walls of my home, it was to serve this rising generation of young people. I always say to them, I want you to know. And I know that I feel of their spirit. I was sitting by President Clark at conference, and the BYU-Idaho choir was singing, and I knew what he was feeling, and I reached over, and I just squeezed his arm, and President Clark turned and said, these are wonderful young people, wonderful souls we're blessed to serve, aren't they? And they are. And I would say to this rising generation, I know a little of who you are. Your Father in heaven knows you well. Trust him. Pray to him. Let him lead you. And even if you make a lot of mistakes along the way, as I have, you'll live what you'll look back on, as I do now, a life that's been most blessed. Be happy.
I can see why you went into education. I mean, I'm sure you had other opportunities in law, but you have served at many institutions across the country. Teaching seems to be your preferred area of endeavor, and you have particular interest in the youth and helping them learn.
For me personally, in my relationship with our Father in heaven and his Son, they've been the great teachers through the Spirit in my life. They're teachers. We will teach through the eternities. It's one thing we take with us. We say we take intelligence with us, but I think intelligence is merely the capacity to teach and to do. So we're all teachers. I just have been particularly blessed that I get to do it for a living, for a vocation as well.
Well, thank you for your years of dedication to all these youth. I'm sure many of them have been blessed because of your efforts. Before we close, Brother Smith, it would be wonderful to hear your testimony of the gospel. Would you share that with our listeners?
Thank you. It's interesting. I always tell my young men, if you're asked to pray, the answer is always, thank you, I'd love to. I would love to be privileged to bear my testimony. I said earlier, all that I have that's good in my life, I owe to having become a member of the Church of Jesus Christ of Latter-day Saints. I have come to know that the gospel's true. I knew that early. I also know that the Church is true. We have been given a wondrous organization, the genius of large and of small. I have seen His hand in my life. I confess that all that's good comes from it. His tender mercies have blessed me on a daily basis. I know that God lives. I know in a wonderful way that the prophet Joseph Smith is who he said he was in all humility. And I owe so much to that young boy who not only set a wonderful example for me as a young boy seeking, but who also opened the very windows of heaven in so many ways to us. I've also been blessed to sit in conference with President Monson. I have felt of his goodness. I have seen much that's good and godly in him, most particularly his caring for the one, his rescuing of each and every soul, his reminder that we operate first and foremost at that level, brother to sister, father to son or daughter, husband to wife, in that wonderful way. Again, I am so grateful that I was snatched out of this world and given the opportunity to know, as I do now, the gospel in its fullness has been revealed and is true. And I pray with earnestness that I will be a dutiful student and ever live up to it in the name of Jesus Christ, whose work this is. Amen.
Thank you. Brother Smith, it's been a delight to have you here with us on Conversations today to share your insights and your testimony. Thank you so much for being with us here today.
Thank you. It's been a joy. This whole work is a joy.
Thank you.
This has been Conversations, a program featuring discussions with members of The Church of Jesus Christ of Latter-day Saints who have a unique perspective or an interesting story. Today's conversation has been with Dr. Rodney K. Smith. Rick Starr was the host. This program is available for downloading as a podcast, or you can listen to it on demand on the Mormon Channel. If you have a comment on this or other programs on the Mormon Channel, you can contact us by visiting the website at radio.lds.org. Thanks for listening to Conversations. We hope you'll join us again, and we invite you to help your family and friends discover the Mormon Channel.